Thank you for downloading from the BBC. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
BBC World Service. I'm Mike Williams with The Y Factor. Today, what goes around comes around.
Well, karma literally means action. And that principle is that if one acts wholesomely, then the result, the fruit, will be good. And if we act unwholesomely, then the fruit will be negative, will be bad.
For every action, there is an equal reaction. And it's just considered a law of nature.
Whatever you do in your life affects your future in this life and in the next life.
Today, karma. What is it and what are the consequences of accepting its existence?
I am Swami Sukhabodhananda. I'm a spiritual guru. I am based in Bangalore, India. Karma is a Sanskrit word which means action, all right? And it is put in different levels the word action is used. In ordinary sense, when you say action, it is just doing. But in a very philosophical sense, when you talk about action, karma, it means the past deeds that you have done, one. The second, the present deeds which you are doing. And there's a third dimension of karma in the Indian culture, which means deeds which will negate the bad deeds that you have done. There are three domains of karma. So therefore, past karma, past actions, which has an impact present. You're doing a present action right now, that's called present karma. And actions which create a very positive future, third. Then actions which can delete the wrong actions that you've done. Even though I am free to act, there is an invisible past which also influences the present. So it's a very comprehensive, holistic word called karma.
Well, there are two things which had always bothered me in some ways.
Sir Mark Tully, for 30 years a journalist in India, and he's written widely about the country and about religion too.
One was the unfairness of birth. Why should some people apparently be born very lucky and very fortunate with silver spoons? And, of course, this was a very stark question in India when you see some people who are born in abject poverty and appear, for the most part, sadly, to be doomed to live their lives in poverty. So that was one of the questions which I felt that karma answered. And another was a similar question, which is this egalitarianism, the fact that we aren't all equal, we can never be equal, and that, you know, some people have this talent, some people have that talent, some people don't appear to have any talent at all. How do these things come about? And karma is one possible explanation for this.
The idea of karma has been interpreted differently by Hindus, Buddhists, Jains, Sikhs, and then groups within those. But there is a fairly general understanding in Hinduism. It's just considered a law of nature.
Shaunika Rishi Das, director of the Oxford Centre for Hindu Studies.
It's how the world works. It's not a spiritual concept, it's just an observation. In science, everything is cause and effect. And Indian observers are just linking the two. They're just making the macrocosm into the microcosm.
Physics is about actions of the physical, inanimate world. In that sense, yes, every action will have a subsequent, this cause and effect.
The theoretical physicist, Professor Jim Al-Khalili.
Definitely have some effect on some other event in the future.
In Europe, in the second half of the 17th century, it began to be possible to differentiate between science and magic. Sir Isaac Newton has been called the last magician and the world's first scientist, and his laws of motion actually made it conceivable that everything might be knowable and predictable.
you could imagine, hypothetically, a computer, a super powerful computer that could calculate the positions and forces of all the atoms in the universe. And then it could crank the handle, the laws of physics, that tell you how they will behave and how they will evolve in time. So in principle, the future, although we don't know it, it's there and it's fixed. You know, what will be, will be. So this notion of karma, isn't that outlandish a concept when you apply it?
But science has moved far since the 1660s, and new theories effectively put paid to the idea of a universe where cause always precedes effect, and in which the effect can always be predicted.
Quantum mechanics is very strange, of course. This is the theory that describes the behaviour of the subatomic world, the smallest particles. And many physicists will say that doesn't really have a bearing on our everyday world of the very large. It's weird, but it goes on down atoms and we don't have to worry about it. But it does say something very fundamental about the nature of reality. One view is that it says the universe is not predetermined. It's not this clockwork universe of Newton that everything is fixed. Everything is subject to fuzzy laws of chance and probability. And so that would throw away this idea of karma. Nothing is decided in advance. Quantum mechanics also says one view of it is that we don't have a single reality. There are parallel universes out there in which all outcomes come to be. So, you know, where I think I'm going to be in the future, well, yes, it was just fated that I would meet so-and-so or that we would get married. There's another universe in which that doesn't happen. All possibilities are acted out. So quantum mechanics does throw a spanner in the works, and it's something that's still being debated. If you then expand that out to human behaviour, then it all gets a bit fuzzy, and physicists tend to sort of shy away from saying our laws that tell us how atoms bump into each other and Higgs bosons being created or whatever really has nothing to say about human emotions and human morals.
Science may have nothing to say about karma, but millions of people around the world have plenty to say on the subject and invoke the word every day.
In my own life, right, one thing is my commitment is to operate without ego. So when I learn to operate there, then the action is not self-centered. The action is life-centered. How do I accept the unfairness of inequality which exists in the world? Without bringing the theory of karma, it is impossible for me to come at peace with the unfairness which exists. A person is poor, and here's a person who's stinking rich. A person is blind, here's a person who's super strong. And if we say God created all of them equal, they're definitely not equal.
Perhaps we've all said it, or at least thought it. What have I done to deserve this? Karma gives us a way to explain the randomness of an uncaring universe, and perhaps that's its appeal. Perhaps that's why so many cultures beyond the Indian subcontinent have embraced the notion.
Mountains of Lhasa are feeling the rain.
In the late 60s and 70s, many people in the Western world took a look at Eastern mysticism and dived straight into it.
I encountered Buddhism in the early 1970s.
This is Mary Finnegan, writer, Buddhist.
Via a rather famous person called David Bowie, who introduced me to his Lama, Chimi Rinpoche.
Child of Tibet, you're a gift from the sun. Reincarnation.
It was the hippie era, and we were taking psychedelic drugs, which influenced the way we saw the world and radically changed my perspective. I don't think that can be said of everybody, but for an awful lot of us, it made it possible to access experience, which had hitherto been, I think, the preserve of shamans and priests and people who kept it very much to themselves, a kind of esoteric elite. As I've said, I think it was the psychedelic drugs.
They just opened the door to Buddhism.
Absolutely, yes. Most of us who had any sense of self-preservation realised that we couldn't go on doing these very strong substances. And we started looking for other means of getting to the same place and going beyond that, really, into levels of realization, of spiritual realization, if you want to call it that. And that's how I got into Buddhism, was through that route.
Do you think that your notions of karma have actually led you to be a better person, to do good things?
Not really. I think that I have improved as an individual, and I hope I have a bit. I mean, I wouldn't like to make a claim to that, but I think I have improved as an individual as a result of my practice and the fact that I have done some meditation.
But do you ever, when considering an action, think, how's this going to pay back in the future?
No.
Shouldn't you? Isn't that what karma's supposed to teach you?
No, absolutely not. No, it's not like that. I'm certainly not. No, I never do.
So people don't...
I mean, I just don't do bad things to people because it's just not the way I want to live.
I have had a number of Eastern names in my time. I was once Jumbatupke. I've been Popchon Sunim. But since I left my formal training as a Buddhist monk and returned to lay life, I feel far more comfortable and far more honest by retaining the name with which I was born.
He was born Stephen Batchelor. He's a writer, philosopher, and an advocate for something he calls agnostic Buddhism.
I live my life in a way in which I seek to take complete responsibility for the decisions I make, what I say to other people, but I don't in any way romanticize or mythologize this as some esoteric theory of karma. But the basic idea, I think, is a very sound one. As a person who seeks to live a life that is compassionate, that is wise, that is tolerant, I pay great attention to how I think, how I speak, how I act, and I pay equal attention to the consequences and the repercussions from what I do in this world.
He talks about ethics, compassion, wisdom, tolerance, but karma gets very contentious when combined with the traditional Buddhist concept of reincarnation.
I think Buddhists would say that if somebody is born disabled, that could have been caused by something that's happened in the past. But if such a statement is said, it shouldn't be said with any kind of judgmental attitude.
That's Dr. Elizabeth Harris, a specialist in Buddhist studies at Liverpool's Hope University in the UK. And next, Stephen Batchelor again.
Those sorts of claims are to me extraordinarily naive. There is no way in which one could ever either demonstrate the truth of such a claim or refute it. And the problem for me with that kind of thinking, let's say, for example, a person who is born with a severe handicap, is that that person is somehow regarded as being morally responsible for the situation that they are in. And this has led in many Asian countries, Buddhist and Hindu alike, to a kind of stigmatizing of people because of disability, because somehow it's their fault. And so I find that kind of explanation really morally rather repugnant.
Even in some Asian countries where the majority is Buddhist, there's a fatalistic view. You know, it must be my karma if something bad happens. But I suppose Buddhists who have read the texts or have studied the philosophy would say, well, that's probably not what the Buddha actually taught at all. In the Pali texts, the texts that are holy to Theravada Buddhists, the Buddha is actually recorded as saying that not everything that happens to you is due to something that happened in the past, and that what happens to us is caused by many different factors. And this means that the principle of karma is not fatalistic. And many Buddhists would want to stress that it's not fatalistic. And in fact, what Buddhism is trying to say is that we can change our life for the better at any moment by changing how we think and how we act. And that to see karma as fatalistic is somehow to distort it. I can remember when I was living in Sri Lanka quite some years ago, and a Buddhist friend of mine said that she could only believe that all those who had been injured and made ill or killed at the Chernobyl incident must have done something collectively bad in the past. And when I heard that, it shocked me. I know there are some disasters that simply cannot be put down to human action, but some can. I think that countries can develop a positive ethos or a negative ethos, and that this has consequences, and that's linked to the law of karma. I mean, if you have a very, very consumerist society, for instance, or a society that is really violating the earth, violating the environment, that has consequences. And that would be putting the idea of collective karma into a kind of contemporary context.
I don't personally believe in a collective karma. I mean, I do think that the Indian psyche has been much influenced by karma. Yes, I do think that. But I think in many ways for better, because I do think that it has built up a society where people are not as competitive, not as individualistic, not as selfishly trying to achieve things for themselves as has happened in Western societies. If we put so much stress on free will, then we start to think, if we're successful, God, I'm great, look what I've done, I'm wonderful, you know. So karma teaches you the humility to accept that you have been born at your birth, you didn't choose your own parents, you didn't choose the talents which you were given or anything like that, didn't even choose your education. And therefore, so much of you is created. And in karma, yes, it's created by what you did in your previous life. But to me, the importance of this is not overestimating your own contribution and therefore not becoming proud, arrogant, or anything like that.
But the truth is that very many millions of Indians live in abject poverty. That in a country with the 10th largest economy in the world. It can't be blamed on karma alone, but perhaps indifference is one consequence of a widespread belief that those doing well have earned their good fortune by past deeds, while those who are suffering must have done something to deserve their pain. And the idea still lingers thousands of years after karma's conception. That power may lie in our desire for natural justice, our hope that good people will thrive.
Life is a big mystery. Karma sends to the world one thing. The inequality in the world is a component of many, many factors. One should be humble and alert to include all those factors into your living. Life is a combination of past and present, so I need to bring the power of acceptance. As I sow, so I reap. There's a Sanskrit phrase which says, what a little lamp can do, the great sun cannot do. It can shine in the night. So you and I, with all the limitations, can be like a lamp, but we can still do something which the great sun cannot do. It can shine in the night. So that my action becomes the seeds of the fruits of tomorrow.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.